If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn and I'm your host. Today, I have a very good friend of mine who is joining us. His name is Jeff Kidwell. Jeff and I actually worked together at Cantor Fitzgerald from 2004 to 2008. Let me tell you a little bit about Jeff. Jeff graduated with a BA from Cornell University in 1982. He's been an active senior architect in the repo and securities lending industry ever since. From 1982 to 2004, Jeff worked at Morgan Stanley, where he became the head of the North American repo desk and helped build the business into one of the top repo desks on the street. From 2004 to 2008, Jeff joined Cantor Fitzgerald and became the co-head of the global repo desk, trading and sales, and managing director. From 2008 to 2018, he joined AVM and was the founder and head of Direct Repo, his over-the-counter peer-to-peer financing product. Jeff is the author of two books and a frequent public voice for the industry. Jeff's experience in the industry has continued in his Kidwell Consultants business. Jeff has designed, written, narrated, and videoed the accredited 11-week course on repo fundamentals. Throughout Jeff's lengthy career, he has been on several task forces for the Federal Reserve and SIA, as well as a member of the Financing Executive Committee of SIFMA. Jeff currently writes a regular repo commentary that is distributed to over 5,000 people in the repo and securities lending industry, including many state treasurers, the Federal Reserve, the ECB, and numerous corporate CFOs. When not speaking about repo, trading repo, or meeting with clients, Jeff also sings the national anthem for Major League Baseball games. He's done that 154 times since 2003. And he has performed frequently in a professional five-part harmony group called Generation Gap, and professionally as an Elvis Presley tribute artist. Please help me welcome Jeff Kidwell.
There, hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. It's been a long time. You left Cantor in 2008. I haven't seen you since then. It's about, 13 years or so?
That's right.
That's amazing. I got to tell you, you and I, we're part of a rare breed. You know, we each stayed with a company, you with Morgan Stanley and me at Cantor Fitzgerald for over 20 years.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just, I guess we're just masochists.
Yeah, it's lifers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, as you know, the name of this podcast is Whispers and Bricks. The whispers are those voices telling you what is the right thing to do and represents the good in life. The bricks represent the bad things that we go through in life. Now, it's common knowledge that everybody in their lifetime at some point in time has at least one, if not several, bricks thrown at them. Now, I've had bricks thrown at me, the biggest brick being 9/11. You, on the other hand, on the surface, seem to have lived a charmed life. However, after a brief conversation that we've had before, I know that is not the case. Now, what I would like to do is I'd like to ask you to please share with me and my audience some of the bricks that you had thrown at you, be it in your personal life or professional life. Would you do that, please?
Sure. In my personal life, many people don't know this, actually. So a lot of people know that I was married. They don't realize that I was married twice. And actually, between the marriages and the divorce processes, and one of them was a record long 11-year divorce process in court, many people don't realize I was married for a total or engaged of 35 years. Both marriages obviously have ended. They were painful marriages and painful divorces, particularly the divorces. First one took 2 years, second one took 11 years. It turns out that my ex-wives were a lot smarter than I realized and schemed the court system and figured out a way to fire lawyers so it would start the whole process over again annually. But anyway,
it's interesting that you say that because I have a very dear friend who's going through a divorce, and his hopefully soon to be ex-wife is already on her fourth lawyer. So,
yes.
You know, I don't know. They hire them, they fire them, and it starts all over again. And I know it's tough. So, man, 11 years, that must have been tough. I'm sorry. Right,
if the person doesn't pay that lawyer after they fire them, then the lawyer won't pass along the discovery and the production information and the files. So that all has to be started again. So you go through the depositions and the discovery, and that takes months, maybe a year. And then when all of a sudden a court date appears, then they fire the lawyer again. So it starts the whole thing again. It just snowballs. So yeah, that was something that I think a lot of people may have heard a bit about, but didn't know, you know, the extent of it.
Wow.
I know that probably only a handful of people in the country know this part, which is that in 2006, I found my daughter. So I never had any children through these 35 years of marriage. But I had had a child before I ever got married. In fact, the first girl I dated for 2 months got pregnant and decided to move away rather than marry me. And she put the child up for adoption. So I never got any information. I didn't know how to find this child. But every April I thought about, you know, I have a child out there. And it really got to me after going through these two failed marriages, not able to see a child or not have a child. And so in 2006, through Catholic Charities, I found my daughter. And we had, I mean, she called me the day after I called them. She called me on the cell phone as I was boarding a plane in West Palm Beach. And I said, oh my God, I've been waiting for this call all my life, but can I call you back in 2.5 hours? So when I landed in New York, I called her and we had a 4-hour conversation. She had no anger towards me, no, she didn't make me feel guilty. She understood. Ironically, at 19, she had an abortion of a child. And ironically, her adoptive mother had put up a child for adoption and then couldn't have children. So it's just a weird thing.
Oh,
it's all
wow.
At age 19. So we had a great relationship. I was giving her away at her wedding. I met her fiance, whose name is Eli Whitney, and he's the great grandson of Eli Whitney.
No way. No way.
Yeah, that gets even weirder. I won't go too far into that.
But wow.
He's a character.
Wow.
Anyhow, we both were dressed gothic when we met, all in black with the Chrome Hearts logos and Celtic crosses and everything. Unfortunately, I think she got my looks. So she was kind of a big girl. And we had a great time. And so I was giving her away at her wedding after I got my first Father's Day card. And about 5 weeks after my first Father's Day card, I got a call that she had died. So she died of an allergic reaction to Cipro. She just had a root canal and had an infection. And there was no one there because her fiance had just broken up with her a week before. So she was alone. So I had 2 years with her. The irony is that I've had a lot of accidents, and I know a lot of people know that. One of the bricks is I got hit by a car and was badly injured. But I've had a lot of sports accidents and things like that. And I actually thought that because of my risky behavior, that she may never learn her medical history. So I wanted to get her biological medical history. And in the end, it was switched around. It was actually so that I could have closure with her and she could have closure with me because she was going to pass on.
Wow. Now, so talk about, you know, the brick of the two divorces and the, you know, the woman who basically ran away with your child. And then all of a sudden, like the whispers coming back where you get in touch with her and, you know, life
annual
must have been-
whisper of, you need to go find her. You need to go find her, thinking that that's because I'm probably going to die given my risky sports and injuries and all that. But in the end, it was actually her.
How old was she when she passed?
She was 28.
28. And she wasn't married.
No,
she wasn't married. Wow. Wow. Jeff, I am so sorry. That is, that is not something that I was expecting. I mean, I kind of knew about the divorce. All right. I didn't know it was 11 years, but, or 13 years all told, but I didn't know about your daughter. How did, look, On the one hand, you had 2 years with her.
Right.
Correct? So yep. God was smiling upon you at that point for those 2 years and said, Jeff, I owe you something. All right, here it is. And he gave you the 2 years with your daughter.
But he also whispered to me and said, now do the right thing. So being a professional singer, I actually sang at her funeral. So I sang four songs at her funeral. Oh. And I heard her voice because she was a professional singer. And we had all these things in common. Both English majors, both worked in the finance field, both sang the national anthem for the Red Sox, both professional singers. I mean, just on and on and on. So I sang at her funeral. And then at the reception afterwards, I get to hear her CD. And I'd never heard her voice. And she sounded wonderful and beautiful.
Wow.
2 years after she passed, I got a letter in the mail from the mother of her former fiance, Eli's mother. And it was written, typewritten, six pages by my daughter of when she met me. It was all about her feelings and when she met me, beautifully written, like Hallmark movie. In fact, I actually took it to a movie producer to see if they wanted to use the
right.
The scene. I mean, it was a perfectly written
wow.
treatise.
Wow. Wow.
That was so well. So basically, cards from the dead.
So, you know, so on the bright side, if you want to call it that, you've got the CD, so you'll always have her voice. And you've got that letter that you'll always have that will basically, you know, give you that knowing what her feelings were.
Right.
All right. And always have that in, you know, written. I mean, that's an incredible gift.
It is.
Okay. If you have to go through a tragedy that you went through, this is definitely a gift from God who's saying, yes. I know I took your daughter, but it was, you know, I needed her here. Okay. But I'm going to leave you with something. So you should always have her. And that's
something else too. So the day I met her, she took the time and patience before she came down to Manhattan to create a photo album of all of her pictures for the 26 years I missed. And she captioned each one. This is my first birthday. This is my first Halloween. And it was wonderful, a huge book. And there was an empty space on the cover. And her boyfriend, fiance had a Polaroid camera. And he took two pictures of us, gave one to her. And one I tucked into the empty space in the front of, and I still have that photo album.
Wow. Wow. So all of this going on, and yet you still managed to keep up a career that is an amazing career. I mean, you've done so much in your life in the financial world. I remember going through your repo program at Canner. I remember that. That was really cool. And the other thing that I found amazing, all right, that it was not in your bio, which I didn't read, was most people don't know you are an avid movie buff.
Oh yes,
right. Yeah. You would. I remember
the movie theater practically.
Yes, I remember. You know, it was like every weekend. It would be every Monday. It would come out. Besides your repo report, there was and I saw five movies over the course of the weekend. And let me give you my critique on the movies. And I'm going like, when did this guy have the time? It was like unbelievable. But I really loved that. That was so cool. It was so great. You know,
but the commentary is still set up like that. Although I don't see as many movies, especially with the COVID pandemic. But back then, I lived above the movie theater at 67th Street and Broadway, and I saw 100 movies to 120 movies a year. So, I mean, I saw a lot of movies.
Oh, yeah.
But the commentary still has the whole entertainment section. It's got the Kardashians. Really? It's got all the sports. And now I've amplified that and put in the F1 racing and all that, because there's some IndyCar racing fans and NASCAR fans. So I put that all in the commentary, too. So it's still entertaining. That's the idea.
Right.
A little bit of information. And then they want to come back and see it more.
Correct. Absolutely. Now,
I can't make all those phone calls to them. It would take me 20 years to make the phone calls to all the people I know. I got a contact list of 9,000 people.
Really? So don't forget, when this comes out, you know, put it out to your 9,000 people. They got to listen to this podcast.
I will.
Now, let me ask you this. All right. Knowing what I now know, you must have gotten to a point that you were so low down, you were so despondent that you probably said to yourself, you know, that's it, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. To heck with my dreams, to heck with the goals, I'm packing it in. All right. You must have done. And if so, how did you manage to get through that? How did you get out of that? What did you do? Did you talk to somebody? Did you seek counsel? Did you go to a priest? Did you go to a rabbi? I don't know what you are or not, but hey.
I've been called worse than that. I reached that point a few times. So it was only once. Actually, at the end of in the middle of my first divorce, which is probably about 1990-91, I sought counsel. So I had a psychotherapist and I got to share my thoughts, and it was very helpful. I think anybody going through a divorce probably should seek some kind of counseling, maybe with a priest or a rabbi or whatever. That helped me then. Things got obviously worse over time. The bricks were bigger. They were kind of like cinder blocks after a while. And so at the end of 2007, when I left Cantor, I left Wall Street. I was done. I was really? Just done. I was discouraged. I was, this is right when I separated from my second wife. I couldn't deal with all the politics, and I couldn't deal with all the stuff going on. Plus, we were in the middle of a crisis, right? This is
2008. Yeah, right. The meltdown. I liquidated
13 accounts. 13 of my chosen customers, unfortunately, were not meeting margin calls, and collateral had to be liquidated. And I was in Howard's office a lot, going over strategies. And it just was so much. I mean, we were working on weekends because it was such a crisis. I remember being there the Columbus Day weekend, like the entire weekend. Yeah. And I had had enough. It had been a long time. And so I come down to Florida, and I actually went to California, met some clients, and then came to Florida where I had a vacation home just to meet a few clients, went to lunch with one client, and they said, oh, my gosh. It's like the Wall Street kingpin, and you're down in Florida now, and you're going to stay in Florida. You have to come work for us. I had basically a month or two off, and suddenly I was back in again. It was like like the Godfather Part 3, and they pull me back in. So I did another 10 years at AVM, and then after that, I still want to be part of this. So I've started this consultant firm, which has no politics. Because there's just me. So
I hear.
I got away from the politics. And I can work on my own pace. And I'm in Florida. No complaints here. Everybody's coming down. All my friends from New York now are moving down here.
Yeah. Was Craig Schneider there when you were there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's funny.
Yeah. He moved to Florida.
Yeah. I think he's talked to me on Facebook a few times.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think he's near me too.
Yeah, wow, that's totally amazing. You know, and what you need to
understand. What got me through it, by the way.
Just oh yes, please.
Question. Yes. What got me through it was making myself busy. If I run, I don't let despondency or depression or loneliness catch up to me. It's not necessarily the best advice to give people, but I keep busy. I have constant to-do lists. Everybody knows that. If they ever saw my trading desk, they saw the to-do list. I have it down here, and I'm constantly crossing things off
and adding new things.
Exactly. I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I just keep busy. Even in my, I don't know if you call it semi-retired state, I'm still actively working, but I make sure that I'm busy. I'm doing something productive.
That's great. You know, one of the reasons I do this is because I know in my audience, there are people that have gone through or are going through what you've gone through, and they can identify. And that's one of the reasons I'm here. And that's one of the reasons I do my podcast, because I want people to understand that no matter what it is that they're going through, somebody else has gone through the exact same thing, and they've gone through it, pulled out of it, and, you know, kept on going on and, you know, continued on with life. And people need to hear that. They need to hear these kinds of stories. So I want to thank you so much for being here and for sharing your story. And it's truly amazing. You're an amazing individual, Jeff. I know you again, you know, a long time. So before we go, all right, words of advice or words of wisdom that you might have for my audience, whether it's a tidbit or something, please.
I think these are age related. Okay. So I discovered at 40 that the world was moving too fast and you need to slow it down. And at 50, I realized everything that I thought was important at 30 or 40 isn't important at all. Nothing of what you think is important in your 30s and 40s is ever important in your 50s. And then in your 60s, I discovered, I just turned 60, that nothing, if something is something you don't want to do, or if somebody wants you to do something and you don't think it's right, you just don't do it. It's just, it's it. You start crossing it. If people are negative energy, you cross them off the list. If this is something you've never liked doing, don't ever do it again. So you start removing the negative things from your life, emphasize the positive things in your life.
There you go.
I've learned that over time.
There you go. And that's the whisper. Somebody tells you, you need to do this. And you go, no, I don't. That's the whispers that, you know, that you're hearing that's saying, this is wrong. This is the wrong for me. This is not, you know, and you walk away. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, it takes courage. It takes courage to do these things. All right. But at the end of the day, it's all for the best. Jeff, thanks so much for sharing your story with my audience. I'm sure you've touched the hearts of many of my audience. Good luck going forward. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Shoman. Until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.